Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lerzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
So for those of you who forgot while we were on break, Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals.
Sure.
Scandals and scandalousness.
Oh my God. Let that be our voices.
I know. Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. And as per usual, we be drinking and we be swearing.
Drinking.
Oh,
there
my
we
God.
Go.
Drinking.
You said drinking. I'm like, what?
What? No, we don't be doing that.
No.
What are you talking about? And today we are drinking. We are drinking an Americano. Stephanie told me that her story today takes place in 1948
yes.
and has something to do with Italy.
Sure,
so,
sure do.
Oh, yes, she better do. So I set to work looking for an Italian cocktail or a cocktail with Italian ingredients that had made it to the United States and would have been popular in the 40s. Turns out that's a pretty tall order. The problem is that while most of the drinks that I found had been around in Italy for a very long time, most Italian liqueurs and like aperitifs didn't really make it big in the United States until like the 50s
yeah.
at the earliest or some much later. So I can't say for certain that Americans in the United States were drinking Americanos in 1948, but, or at least not many.
Yeah.
But I can say for sure that it was popular with Americans vacationing in Italy for decades.
Okay.
And I'm calling that good enough.
No, that totally is.
I
knew it was going to be.
That's like part of the story.
A tall order asking for a cocktail so early.
No, that's okay. Yeah, but I was like, this is part of the history of the story that it was popular with American tourists. So I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's good enough. So this simple cocktail is called an Americano. I am dedicating this cocktail segment to our friends Rachel and Leah over at Hashtag History.
What?
Because the Americano contains two of their absolute favorite ingredients
really
in the
does.
World, Campari and vermouth.
Yeah.
That is a joke. They hate both of those things.
It's a hilarious joke.
Yes, exactly. Hilarity ensued. So the Americano was created by Gaspare Campari.
Okay.
The actual creator of Campari. He opened his own bar in Milan in the 1860s and started selling cocktails made with his namesake aperitif. And one of the most popular cocktails that he served at his bar was called a Milano Torino.
Mm.
It was literally just equal parts Campari, which was made in Milan, and Italian sweet vermouth, which was made in Torino.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the cocktail became especially popular with American tourists. And eventually he added some soda water to give it some effervescence. And since it was so big with Americans, he called it an Americano.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I love that. Simple. I've never had it.
Really?
No. Oh. Never had it. I've had Campari just with soda water because I really enjoy Campari. I know it's super, super bitter.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to try this.
Some people say that this drink was especially popular during Prohibition, when Americans that were on vacation outside of the U.S. were basically drinking everything in sight that they could while they had the chance.
They were drinking in the street, too, because you can drink liquor in the streets here.
The Americano also happened to be the first cocktail ever mentioned in any of the James Bond novels.
Really?
So after Casino Royale was published in 1953, the Americano blew up in the United States, too. So it took a couple more years after 1948 for it to actually get over here, but Americans loved it well before 1948 in Italy. Another fun fact about the Americano that you might know this, but maybe not. It was actually the precursor to the Negroni.
Oh,
legend.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Legend has it that in Florence in the early 1900s, an Italian count named Camillo Negroni asked a bartender to tweak his Americano by swapping out the soda water with gin.
Wow.
And he liked it so much that he named the cocktail after himself.
Oh my God. I love all these people just naming booze after them.
I know.
Amazing.
Yeah. So should we take a little taste?
Oh yeah. I'm excited. I know you love vermouth. Yes. Like I know I'm going to love it.
I do. I don't love Campari. I like it in small amounts. Like I like it in something where it's mixed with other stuff. So maybe I like this. Let's see.
I love it.
No, I like that.
Yeah, it kind of sweetens up the Campari.
Yeah,
makes it a little less
exactly
bitter.
Yeah, and the soda water kind of waters it down a little bit, which I enjoy because it's very bitter. I do like that sort of like bittersweet and slightly effervescent kind of bubbly thing that's going on. As bitter as it is, it feels very light and like refreshing.
Yeah, I think the bubbles. I mean, I added extra bubbles to mine, but yeah, it does feel very light.
Yeah.
Whereas a Negroni
is
so heavy. I love it. But
Negroni is also much stronger than this because these are both like digesti or aperitifs or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're not like booze, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's medicinal.
I feel like I personally would like it with a little tiny bit less Campari and maybe more vermouth, but that's okay. Just me. I do really like vermouth and kind of just drink vermouth on its own. Sweet vermouth.
Yeah.
On its own sometimes. So, but yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, I like it. But I knew I was going to like it. So it's,
yes, I like, I knew all, you were going to like it too.
All of the ingredients. So it would be weird if I didn't. Yeah. So hashtag, they don't like vermouth either. Vermouth is so good. It's so like smooth.
It's also
and
like,
kind of like, I mean, it is odd, a little odd.
But there's also like it very much depends on the kind of vermouth and even the brand, because different brands of sweet vermouth taste very different from one another. So maybe they just had a bad bottle.
Okay, well then I've never had a bad bottle to my knowledge.
Yeah. There was just a bottle that had like a flavor that they didn't care for or something.
It's not a popular thing to drink in the US, so I get it being kind of just like weird. And in Campari is extra, extra weird. But yeah, I am in Rome.
When in Rome.
Oh my God. So my ex was visiting this past weekend. And if I had a euro for every time he said, when in Rome.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
So my story involves Italy. Shocking, right? With this cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
So Rome used to be an empire. Everyone knows that, right? What does that sound?
Yes. Oh, I was stirring my cocktail. Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm like so hyper vigilant for sounds now, but it's like just a regular cocktail sound. So we all know that it started as a republic and in ancient times. It's so weird to walk around this city. It feels like a ruin.
Yeah.
Like it's so strange. And you can always tell the tourists because like Romans, they're like, this is just my city. They're not like, what the fuck? Like looking up. So in ancient times, like the empire, it dominated the region, all of the Mediterranean for hundreds of years, but its force would never really be what it was initially.
Okay.
But in 1861, fragmented city-states and regions decided that they were going to unite under a king.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Yeah, it's Europe. Everyone has a king at this point. It was a constitutional monarchy similar to what the UK has, meaning that the royal subjects could vote. But because it was 1861, the voting was bullshit. Only landowners could vote. Only people who had like tons and tons of money, similar to the US, minus the racism, could vote. So they decided, this king shit was okay for a while, but in 1946, the monarchy was just wasn't hitting the way it used to hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, let's do this democracy shit for real. Let's hold elections. Let
This was still going on like throughout World War II then? What about like Mussolini?
I'm going to get into that. Okay. But
okay.
At that time, Italy still had a king. That was the Kingdom of Italy. Huh, yeah.
That is wild. I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. It is a fun story because Mussolini was like such a wild character. So I think I'm going to end up doing two scandals, or at least this in a mini, because I'm giving a lot of background about Italian history because it's so fucking long. So this is going to be kind of an overview of this beginning part. But yes, you were right to ask about Mussolini. I was hoping, I'm like, maybe I can slip it in real quick. But I will be.
Can't get any World War II shit.
I know, truly. I don't know who I thought I was dealing with. I'm actually embarrassed. I'm covered in shame. So they decided that they wanted a real democracy. They wanted everyone to be able to vote. During this period of their little kingdom, because so few people could vote, there became a really strong right-wing contingent. Imagine they had the majority. It's so weird when few people vote. Like somehow it's right-wing. I the world will never know. Yeah.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, like right-wing really gains power when people can't vote. Really makes you not think. Mm-hmm. So after World War II, the Kingdom of Italy decided that they were going to set up, like I said, a democracy. This was the 40s. Most women in, like, I don't want to say developed, but like a lot of women could vote at this point. Like women could vote in the U.S. So they wanted to have a democracy where everyone could vote. Regardless,
and women still couldn't vote even in the 40s. And
so women could vote in local elections, but it was very like region. I know, so weird. It's like,
yeah,
they couldn't vote in national elections.
That is so wild.
Yeah, until I think 46, there was like a, but it wasn't a national election. It was some regional thing, I believe. So this is just an aside. Can you guess how many constitutional monarchies still exist in the year of our Lord 2023? Because I saw this number and it shook me. It's not okay.
God, constitutional monarchies. Like England's kind of.
Yeah, like have a king or a queen.
50?
Wow, you went high. Okay, it's 43, which is way too fucking high.
I just thought, I mean, there's so many weird little countries that we know nothing about.
But also like, Spain, the Netherlands.
Spain?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Spain, the Netherlands, like most of the Scandinavia, I think Denmark, Sweden have kings. I mean, it's outrageous to me, truly. And I know it's like, they're just a figurehead. But like, why do we still have kings?
Yeah. I mean, I guess better that than like actual just a monarchy.
But these people, I mean? They're paying every year to have this, like, what?
Oh, I did know there was still royalty in Spain. Yeah. I knew that because, yeah.
It's not okay. Do better, y'all. So Italians wanted everyone to vote. They wanted a government that served the interests of their people, et cetera, et cetera. This is a gross oversimplification of Italian history. And I don't want, I'm telling like everyone I meet in Italy about the podcast, but like, I know that, they're going
to
come for me after this episode. You guys can't be mad at me. Your history is too long. So I shortened it. Leave me alone.
Also like every episode we do, we have to kind of give like a very like rough overview of certain things. My prohibition episode, there was so much detail.
But I think just because Italy, like this region, this is proto-Italy. It's just so old and it's hard to talk about it. Yeah. Anyways, moving on because this is already. So where was I? So yeah, after 2 years, so they did this like interim election, but in 1946. So 1948 is when their vision of having a free and open national election would take place. They were very excited that like, we are going to be a democratic republic. We're going to vote. Everyone's going to take part. It's going to be great. So this election.
Love that.
Love that for them. So the election of 1948 remains to this day one of the most significant and controversial elections in Italian history. This election was a battle between the Christian Democrats and the Popular Democratic Front, which was a coalition of left-leaning political parties, mostly the socialists, the biggest socialist group and the biggest communist party. They were together in a coalition because this is a parliament. This is like a...
Sure.
Yeah. They have multiple parties. I'm jealous. So my scandal today is the CIA's role in Italy's first election.
Oh, no.
Yep. But first, a toast.
A toast.
To foreign election interference being only bad when other nations do it, but NBD when we do. Because come on.
Come on.
Forget about it.
I will drink to that.
Cheers. Yeah. Mess. So what do you think? Like, when you think of Italy, what comes to mind?
When I think of Italy.
But also politically.
I don't know.
Yeah, just.
Politically. I guess when I think of Italy politically, I know nothing about Italy's politics, to be honest.
Really?
I know Mussolini, oh, okay. And that's about as far as it
goes. I mean, Mussolini's a big one. I mean, fascism was created in Italy. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. It's not to say that conceptually the concept, you know, it didn't exist or even the practice of it didn't exist. But in 1919, Italians gave it a name, fascismo, which sounds bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sounds really bad.
It sounds too much like machismo.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very similar. And do you know who Il Duce is?
Never heard of
him. Okay. Well, this was the name that Benito Mussolini gave himself. It means the leader.
Okay, sure. That makes sense.
He, I guess, asked people to call him the leader. It's like, bro, this is gross.
I mean, it's no different than Hitler calling himself the Führer.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay. So maybe he was inspired. The Führer was inspired by just another asshole doing bad things. Yeah, so in 1919, the Italians made fascism a thing. Mussolini, he gained a lot of support from war veterans, which, you know, makes sense. These are people who are, I don't want to say easily led, but like to be led by a strong man, et cetera.
Yes, et cetera.
You know, strong air quotes. So it was war veterans, landowners, and the middle class who really were disillusioned with democracy. They didn't like that people were being able to vote. Like they didn't like that so many people were having a say.
We can't allow that.
Yeah. So he built this cult of personality, presenting himself as this strong leader, and like only he could bring this country back to their former glory. He really identified with the Roman Empire and was like, we need to expand and, get back to that like glory of, you know, this region. So in 1922, Mussolini and his followers, they staged a show of force. It was called the March on the Capitol, meaning Rome. It was actually just called the March on Rome, but like, it's very like, this is what authoritative people do. They get their followers, authoritarians, they get their followers and they're just like, hey, let's just take the government by force. And that's basically what he did.
It doesn't sound familiar.
Right? No, right? when the will of the people say one thing, but like you just want it your way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they rolled up on the king. And they basically said, like, hey, we really like this guy Mussolini. We think he should lead us. And, like, you can still be around, but like he's gonna lead, and like if you're not okay with this, just know you're probably gonna die right now. So he's like, oh yeah, totally, I'll be.
I love it.
What a great idea. So this
sounds great.
So this is how
I'm sorry to interrupt. Was there like a prime minister kind of a situation like there was in England at this point? No.
No. Okay. So this is before they decide that they want to be a country. This is in the kingdom. This is in the 20s.
Ah, yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Their elections would be in the 40s. I kind of went back in time.
Sure.
Just okay. Because yes, a lot of just how Italy used to be, like their fascist days, really informs this story.
Okay.
How right wing they were at one point. So
I'm also just having a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that in the 1920s, it wasn't a constitutional monarchy. It was just a straight up monarchy.
No, it was a constitutional monarchy.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was
but there was no prime minister.
There was no prime minister.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Bizarre.
Yeah. There was, I don't know who was there. I guess it was the king, but people voted. I'm very confused. Actually, I need to look into this. Oh,
I mean, I guess that's possible that the king is the prime minister.
Yeah, sort of like. Nothing came up of a prime minister before. There was like an interim person in like 1946, but like they were not like fully voted, like because it wasn't a national election year.
Sure.
But that's when they decided that they were going to shake off, or at least attempt to shake off the monarchy. They wanted the real thing. So Mussolini, like once he basically told the king, like, "Hey, I'm going to be running shit." Once he got into power, he abolished democracy. Imagine. He's like, my party's the only party, friends. And the rest is kind of history. And I bring up this, you know, fascist past because it really played a huge role in the post World War II era, because the country, they really had to grapple with their fascist past after the war. They were trying to figure out what to do with these sympathizers. They wanted to build a new, like a real democracy. They wanted to prevent any sort of person like this rising to power again. And they knew that they had these like anti-democratic tendencies. Like there was enough people who were like, yeah, Mussolini, that they were kind of scared by that. So they wanted to draw up a society that would make sure that these hoes never saw power again, basically. Yeah. They had debates about what to do with collaborators. There were all of these, they were very woke for like that era. But I think that's what they did in Germany too. Like there was,
yeah, they had to,
exactly.
But also like the people who were, I mean, those people existed while the Nazis and while Mussolini's party was in power. Those progressives were still there. They just weren't in power. Mm-hmm. So when the power situations shift, the cream rises to the top, I guess.
I love that analogy. Thank you. No, but that
doesn't really make any sense.
No, but it's true though. Like there, like you said, there were left wing people, but they had been silenced under Mussolini, and they're coming back and saying like, "Hey, like we need to make sure this doesn't happen again. How can we get there?"
Yes.
So they looked at their institutions, and they're like, "Okay, do we reform this, or do we just get rid of this?" Like they were having real debates, and I think it is similar to Germany because they were forced to, because things had gone so awry.
Yeah.
So they had to do all of this while their country was partially in ruin, physically and economically. Like they were going through it. They had a lot of, they had super high inflation, high in unemployment, and because of that, really widespread poverty. However, within several years, Italy was able to build a stable democratic system. They adopted a new constitution in 1947. And they decided that they were going to establish this multi-party system, this parliament system. Okay. Again, lucky them. The Marshall Plan money definitely helped. They did not get as much money as Northern Europe, but they received, you know, they got some money, and it really did help. I read a lot of just scholarship on this, and there's a lot of debates. A lot of people said that, like, the Marshall Plan did Italy dirty, and it created this wealth gap that still exists today, which I'm sure is probably true, maybe even definitely true, but it wasn't related to my story. So I'm just like, moving on. They got Marshall Plan money, and it was great. So despite these, like, you know, they're stabilizing, they're doing really well. They had a lot of issues with corruption, a lot of issues with organized crime and just political extremism. The crime and the corruption, that just happens when there's a power vacuum. Just, you know, the worst of people move in and they're like, oh, we're running shit now. Like, Il Duce's gone, but, like, I'm here, bitch. So this was something that they were definitely struggling with. The country was super divided politically. There were still people who felt like, you know, like it always is. Like, they were rooting for their man, and their man went down, and they're upset.
We were rooting for you.
We were rooting for you. But also the left is like, hell yeah. Like, we can be the left again. Like, this is going to be great. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of, they were just very politically divided, and the CIA was about to make it much worse.
We're the fucking worst. God damn it. God damn us.
Yeah.
In Italy too? Like, come on. South America, I expect that from us.
So Italy was ground zero. It started in Italy. Yeah. I'm kind of jumping ahead a little, but yeah, it's,
oh my God,
it started in Italy. This is the test case. This is their first use case. So just stepping back in time just a little bit to talk about the labor movement in Italy, because Italy, like most of Europe during the early, well, no, I guess the late 19th century and early 20th century, they dealt with a lot of industrialization, urbanization. People are moving into the cities. This happened pretty much everywhere in Europe. Because of this, Italians, they got really fed up with their really shitty working conditions. Their low pay, the fact that there was no social safety net. Like, if they got hurt on the job, it's like, oh well, you're bad.
Yeah, sucks for you.
Sucks for you, yeah. So they formed socialist and communist parties. They're just like, okay, capitalism isn't doing it for us because we're getting injured and we're being, no one gives a shit. And yet we are the ones who are making you money. Like, this seems a little backwards. So these parties were super, super popular because they focused on helping the poor in their real, like, material living conditions. It wasn't just like, wasn't just theory. They're just like, hey, let's organize and let's get better wages together. They made a lot of gains. They were extremely popular because they also gave people a sense of belonging. It gave people a sense of like, okay, this person is dealing with the same thing as me. They're not me, but, like, I will stand with them. Class consciousness is what they had at this time. And it was, yeah, it was catching on throughout Italy, not just in the big industrial zones. So I think because Italy had been pushed so far to the right under Mussolini, that going to the left was the only way, really, the only corrective way. But the CIA was like, no, 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 not on our watch. So they got to scheming. If Italy swung to the left, in their mind, it would upset the balance of power in Europe. This was the Truman.
How is that your fucking business?
Thank you. Thank you.
Mind your business.
if only they could mind their business. This was the Truman era.
Of course. Fuck that man forever.
Thank you. Fuck that man forever. The literal worse. Yeah.
I mean, there's been much worse.
I know. Okay. But he dropped two bombs and wanted to drop more.
He was supposed to be, yes, that is also so, true. Like, but he was supposed to be like progressive too. Like he was fucking FDR's predecessor. Like,
I know that is, this was Truman. Truman really, even though he was quote unquote progressive, he didn't give a fuck. It was all about like power and flexing might. And like, he was really, really bad. He knew that something had to be done, quote unquote, had to be done in Italy. But because the US was positioning itself as like pro-democracy, they had to be really sneaky about it. They're like, we want to interfere in this election, but we can't be seen to interfere in this election because that is a bad look in this new nation's first election.
It's so fucked up that this story sounds so familiar because I've heard it so many times before, but this is where it started.
And that's the only reason why I did this story, because like you said, I have heard this story a million times, but this is patient zero. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And when I learned that, I'm like, I'm going to have to do this, even though it does feel a little repetitive, but like it's
absolutely necessary.
Yeah. So general elections were held in Italy on the 18th of April, 1948. And this was, again, their first parliament of the new Italian Republic. According to a historian, an Italian historian named Gianni Corbi, this election was the, quote, most passionate, most important, the longest, the dirtiest, and the most uncertain electoral campaign in Italian history.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's saying something.
That is saying something. Caveat, Italians like to say stuff.
Sure. Yes. Okay.
They are.
They're like, we caught a fish and it was this big.
Oh no! I mean, oh my God, my Italian friends are gonna be mad at me. But like, y'all like to exaggerate a little. But also, it was a really big deal, and that can't be understated.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you guys. So this election was between. In the U.S.'s mind, like these competing, but also in the mind of Italy, there were these competing visions of like what Italy should be. So it felt very, this is like the first year of the Cold War. So this election felt extremely significant. It, in the U.S.'s mind, at least, it represented a battle between democracy and communism. At a time when the Soviet Union in the West, their tensions were still really high. They would get higher and higher, but they were still very high at this point. And the U.S. feared that if Italy had become left-leaning, they would succumb to the pressure of, you know, the Kremlin. The Kremlin would make them communist, and that's, you know, that's bad. So...
That's bad.
Bad. It's so bad that they were willing to interfere in this first election. And like I said, it would become a blueprint, unfortunately. This would not be the last time.
Like, we just can't let them win. You know what I mean? Like, we can't, if we're these two powers that are big and have all this control, we can't let them have Italy.
Yeah. Basically, yes. And it's, my whole thing is like, okay, from a U.S. perspective, like if communism is so bad and so broken and so awful, like, can't you just let it be awful and bad and broken? Like, won't people see the light when it breaks down, obviously? But no, we're not going to let it break down. We're just going
to. Yeah, this is not your country. You don't have to live in this country.
Yeah, they don't care about that. So In February of that year, so the elections were held in April. In February, the Soviet Union basically stole Czechoslovakia. It was a region that was not part of their territory, and they marched over and grabbed it, very similar to Ukraine. They're just like, this is ours now. And this really set the ball in motion, because this was an act of aggression, and they took it violently. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. started to think like, oh, like Italy could be the next territory claimed by the Soviet Union. So they had to do something. They were afraid that the Popular Democratic Front, or the FDP, they were afraid that they were going to win the upcoming election, because they had a lot of support. And this is the coalition of the socialist and communist parties
and the communists
in Italy.
Do you happen to know, like, if the country tended to lean more socialist or more communist, or if it was kind of equal?
They've always had socialist leanings, but also there was the pull of the Catholic Church. So it was, it's hard to really say, because things were so right wing under Mussolini, but the left was still active during that time. They were just being suppressed. I think they like to be in the center. But like but also, I'm going to get into it at the end.
Sure.
Communism has always been something that has been really, hasn't been the boogeyman that it is in the U.S. and Italy.
Yeah.
They were very much open to it playing out. But yeah. So the FDP, like I said, was made up of the Italian Communist Party and the Italian Socialist Party. I will be using the acronyms PCI to be the Communist Party. It's kind of like, it's in Italian, so it sounds like it's backwards. It's like Partito Comunista Italia, I guess. But yeah, so the PCI is the Communist Party, and the PSI is the Socialist Party. And they came together as the Popular Democratic Front, or the FDP. The PCI was the big bad, obviously. The little bad was the PSI.
Sure.
But to their right was the Christian Democratic Party, or the DC. And they were the party that was, you know how I said that there was like an interim government in 1946? They were the party that was in charge. And I did not look into, like, there was a vote, I think, but I really didn't look into that. But they were the party in charge when the election rolled around 2 years later. They were very much centrist. They represented the interests of the Catholic Church, but they also held center-left policies, because it is Europe, and like, this is just popular there.
Sure.
Yeah, they were seen as like a catch-all party, meaning that they had center-right and center-left. They were just like a big circle in the middle, basically.
Sure. Okay. Okay.
So they advocated for a mixed economy, meaning that there would be both private enterprise and government intervention when needed. They also supported a strong social welfare system, including healthcare and education.
This is the Christian one?
This is the Christian.
Oh, I mean, this all sounds pretty good, too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't our Democratic Party be like this?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So the DC had previously worked in coalition with the left. They worked with both the PCI and the PSI prior to taking money from Truman, essentially, prior to the Marshall Plan. But once they started receiving a lot of funding from the U.S., Truman basically told them, like, hey, you can't work with them anymore. Like, if you really want that sweet, sweet aid, like, you need to move a little bit more to the right.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So the head of the DC at this time was a man named, last name De Gasperi. He was basically told, like, you can get down with us and get this money, or, like, you're kind of on your own and you might lose. But, like, they were never really going to let him lose.
Sure.
So he was urged to be more capitalist in his messaging and to essentially cut ties with the left. Like those friends of yours from back in the day, like they're dead now. Like don't talk to them. They're hot lava. So the Cold War was just getting started. I said this was their first year, and this was a test case. And this is when the CIA comes in and does what the CIA does. But I feel like this is a good time for a break now that we have a foundation. When we come back, we can get into all of the fuck shit.
Yay. I love fuck shit.
So, have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out? Or if you could build a jetpack using only machine guns? Well, turns out you could, but you really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha, host of a podcast that's for folks who like learning about weird stuff. It's called, Well, That's Interesting. This is a comedy science-y show that tells the story behind the facts, and yeah, those stories are funny. It's the perfect way to learn and remember something, which is really useful now that we all have to make small talk again. Every week, I'll be joined with a guest who's coming in cold and learns everything in real time, just like you. Reactions are real, the facts are bizarre, and the laughter is plentiful. Listen to Well, That's Interesting wherever you do podcasts.
Okay, and we're back.
Mm-hmm. Got myself a fresh cocktail.
Yeah, I'm trying. Americano. I'm trying to make my cocktail last. I should have got, I don't know what I was thinking, just getting one of these, knowing how much I loved all of the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
For shame. Anyways,
it's pretty damn tasty. I would, it's very much growing on me, even like with the bitterness.
Yeah.
I think because the soda water waters it down in a way that gin just does not in a
Negroni. Oh, no, it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I could drink this. Yeah. I could like order this at a bar in the summer and very much enjoy sitting around and drinking this all day.
Yeah. Gin is another kind of intense flavor. I don't think it's intense, but I really, I get why certain people don't like gin because it definitely has a flavor.
It is a strong flavor and it does nothing to like dilute the other flavors. It almost sort of heightens all three.
It kind of does. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it though. It's so good. Okay. Getting into the CIA, what we're all here to learn about their fuckery.
So, who doesn't love some fuck shit?
Oh man. They are just, I mean, this is what they were created to do, I guess. So they had a wide range of ways that they wanted to support this Christian Democratic Party. Like I said previously, this party was so great. Like it in the beginning, like the fact that they were meeting in the middle and like it was an expansive middle. But the US got involved and like, get smaller. So their main push was to just discredit the left, meaning both the communists and the socialist parties.
Sure.
That was their mission, that was their MO. They had to do a lot because, you know, these Italians were out here not thinking about US interests. And
unbelievable.
Right? The nerve of some people just voting for themselves. It's really selfish if you think about it. So their main vehicle for fuckery was propaganda. Propaganda. They also had bags of money, literally bags of money. And they would later go on to fund paramilitary groups, you know, as one does.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine the US doing all of these things?
All sort of all together, all at once, with their powers combined.
Exactly.
They are Captain Fuck Shit.
Oh my God. Is that the name of this episode? So I'm gonna
I think it might have to be.
So So I'm going to go through these one by one, the propaganda, the just, you know, bribery and the paramilitary groups. So the biggest tactic, and it's like kind of the easiest tactic, is just propaganda. They did this directly and indirectly. So the agency, they funded, I mean, they funded everyone. They had so much money. They bought newspapers, they bought magazines, they bought radio stations, and they just, anyone who was sympathetic to the DC or the newly shifted DC could get that money. Mm-hmm. Any group that was hostile to the left, to the PCI and the PSI could get money. The CIA, they printed and they distributed millions of leaflets throughout Italy, which contained anti-communist messaging, obviously, messaging that warned Italians of the consequences of a communist victory. These materials all seemed like they were coming from Italy. They even paid for books to be published. All of this stuff was meant to scare Italians into thinking that a win by the communists would be really, really bad for them and just their society, their children, etc. Time magazine got in on it. They put the leader of the Christian Democracy Party on their cover, the year of the election. It was their main story. In the article.
What?
Yes. In the article.
What the fuck are we doing?
I mean, there were a lot of Italian Americans in the country at the time. This was, I mean, this was propaganda. This was how you influence rich uncle who's just like, oh, don't you dare vote for them. Like, they're going to ruin Italy. Propaganda is, I mean, it works. Look at Fox News.
Yeah.
It fucking works every single time. So, in this article in Time magazine, they said that the FDP, meaning the left coalition, would push Italy to the brink of catastrophe. Yeah. Imagine.
Y'all can't hear my my whole – it wasn't even just my eyes. My entire head just rolled.
Yeah, your entire being just rolled. I saw it.
That is,
I saw it.
That is true. Yeah.
Every fiber of your
soul rolls.
It was one of those soul rolls. It's true. Oh, man. That's funny. Oh, man. Where was I? Soul rolls. Soul rolls. So, yeah, brink of catastrophe. And it's like, okay, you guys are, you're doing a alarmist, like, just a little too much. But the whole goal was to get Italian Americans to influence their family members in Italy, you know, and I guess to push them to do the right thing, eye roll. So the CIA also provided the Christian Democratic Party with significant financial contributions. The party didn't have a lot of money. I mean,
shocking.
I know, right? Uh-huh. This is the bags of coin part. Mm-hmm.
Gas.
Yeah. Tux just ripped his pearls from his neck.
yes.
So yeah, the party didn't have a lot of money, but the CIA had all of the money. So they were able to funnel a lot of US coin through different front organizations and shell companies. This money was used indirectly for the party to make its own with the US dollars, make their own propaganda, basically. Yeah.
Sure.
So it was always anti-communist because, you know, they were the big bad again. So it's told that.
And this party, like, wasn't like that before the U.S. got involved. This,
I mean,
they weren't trying to, like, run around and fuck with their competitor
no,
or their,
they weren't.
You know, opposition or
they
whatever.
They were working with them. Yeah.
This.
They were working okay, with them yeah. very successfully. So, yeah, answering that question made me feel sad. But, yeah, they were working with them. So the U.S., it is rumored. We don't have all of the receipts, but it is mm-hmm. Historians say that the U.S. funneled anywhere from $10 million to $20 million in, you know, back in the day, which is $125 to $250 million into Italy just for this one election in anti-PCI purpose. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That honestly sounds like a conservative estimate, in my opinion, for the U.S.
Again, this is test case one. They didn't know how
much
they needed.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's true.
Yeah. So they're just starting out. They're like, this is this. Well,
yeah. They're like, let's just go like a little drop of money and let's see. Yeah.
So the CIA, this is like, in addition to the money that the U.S. was, may or may not. I mean, it is a wide range. We don't have the receipts, and also it's a CIA, so it's very hard to get, hard numbers. But the CIA made use of off-book sources of financing to give, to give them even more money. They pulled funds from the Marshall Plan and funneled them into Italy specifically for anti-communist propaganda. They also took, it's estimated, $10 million in Nazi money steered towards the Communist Party. I don't know how they, I guess the banks there, they just took them. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of sort of like,
just
wealth, just kind of like, who does this belong to,
kind of thing? The Jewish people, obviously. Mostly.
Yeah.
So
no. I mean, we didn't care about Jewish people back then here either.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. So it was just extra money lying around, basically. They're like, we can use this in Italy. So
we don't care about Jewish people here today.
Okay, I'm gonna take a sip. It's true. That hit me a little too hard, Tux, okay? We're talking about the past. So
stop trying to correlate this horrible story with anything that's going on right now.
So the only good thing, I mean, it's not good. The only like beautiful thing was that some of this propaganda, because it was being made in Italy and like Italy loves design and beauty, are really pretty. Like the propaganda that the posters that they made are really stunning still. I was looking at them and I'm like, wow, this has really nice balance. The message is trash and I hate it, but like you were trying to make it pretty.
I mean, I guess if you're going to make propaganda, make it pretty.
I mean, we've seen the rights propaganda.
Girl, they need some Italians.
Thank you. Yeah.
They're not going to get any gays to help them. So how are they going to figure it out?
It's like, how are you failing at making memes? Like you guys like,
seriously,
like a child can make a meme. Like, but yeah.
Stop asking Nance and Rand to make your memes
truly,
for you.
Truly. Yes. It is Nance and Rand. If you guys don't know who these fictional people are, you need to get on Instagram. Middle class fancy. Look it up. So I'm going to put some of my favorite of the posters. I mean, it's favorite in air quotes. Like they're just really pretty. I mean,
you're like my favorite, the prettiest propaganda.
I mean, it's on some bullshit, but like at least they're like, you know, the white balance is there, you know? They're
They know how to use like font and
They know how to use fonts and spacing, and like that's like literally the only thing I'm not mad about in this story. It's like you guys pick great fonts.
Oh my god. Dear God, can you imagine if the right in this country?
Oh, don't even say that. Like no. Oh my god, if they had a good designer. No.
The horror.
That would never happen because, that would never happen. Look at that.
That's also true. Yeah.
this is how I call myself.
Look at the material.
Anyway, so my favorite poster, one of my favorites, I should say, is a poster that read, "In the secrecy of the voting booth, God can see you, Stalin can't."
Oh, My fucking God.
They went there.
God can see you, but Stalin can't?
Stalin can't. So do the right thing by God is what they're saying. Yeah.
Do the right thing.
I mean, it's like they...
This is
they...
a Spike Lee joint.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is Italy, and there is... I'm going to talk about this at the end, but the Vatican was also doing all sorts of funding, lots of... putting a lot of money into the Christian Democratic Party as well. And this is how you can get some Italians, like by really...
Sure. Yeah. You know, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this country. All you got to do is bring up God.
Yeah.
God or country. And that's, you know...
Yeah. So the CIA also engaged in more direct forms of intervention. They funded and trained anti-communist paramilitary groups. These groups were used to intimidate, to attack left party members and supporters, and their supporters' families. The CIA also worked to discredit the Communist Party by spreading rumors and false information. And just, you know, the general, again, this is the model. So this is the first time that the U.S. is doing this on a really big national scale. They're really... putting out a lot of disinformation, trying to get people scared, but also they have their muscle. So I think I might do, I haven't looked into it, I might do a mini episode about some of the paramilitary groups that the U.S. was supporting during this time after the war. They were doing a lot in Italy, and it might be a full episode. So I'm just going to skip over this, kind of just gloss over it. Just know that they paid essentially guerrillas to be in the country, creating chaos and violence.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. They were trying a lot of things out. They were, and again, this is the model. This is where they learned how to influence an election.
I don't know why it's like, it's so... not surprising to me that they're doing this in the Middle East, they're doing this in South America, they're doing this in Central America. And I'm just kind of like, I mean, not that I think it's okay in any way whatsoever, but like, it doesn't surprise me at all. But that that they were doing this in Europe and getting away with it, and everyone was just like, yeah, sure. And we don't even know about it.
We don't even know about it. Yeah, I felt the same way, and I felt bad about it. I'm like, this is what they do in South America and Central America, but like, Italy? What?
Yeah.
So one of the most controversial aspects, like if you read the historians talk about it, was just their campaign of bribery, like all the people that they bought. There's a lot of information about this because some CIA people spilled the beans. And it only, you know, it only takes a few loose lips, and then it's like, oh shit! Like you did what?
Somebody sank my ship. Somebody sank my battleship.
Basically, yeah, they. I mean, they didn't sink shit, but like at least you know the word got out.
Sure.
This battleship is still going today. So
it's only gotten bigger. And Bush hung a banner on it.
Yes. Yes. So I found a quote from a CIA operative who was active at the time, a man named F. Michael Wyatt. Sorry, F. Yeah. Mark Wyatt.
I mean, he I said agree. That we F. had Mark Wyatt.
I know, right? I think it's like a, but it's like you give your middle name and your last name. Like we can figure out your first name, sir.
I mean, there's other people like F. Scott Fitzgerald. There's, yeah, you know what I mean?
Okay,
like
maybe. Maybe they're not trying to hide. Maybe they're just, maybe this is a vibe they're trying to create. So he said that we had bags of money that
were. Or maybe his first name is like Filbert.
Oh, and then I totally understand. Yeah. Filbert.
Sorry.
Mark Wyatt, I love it. So he said that we had bags of money that we delivered to selected politicians to defray their political expenses, their campaign expenses, for posters, for pamphlets. We bribed key figures in Italian politics and society, including journalists, trade union leaders, and even members of the Catholic Church.
Not shocking at all, but
yeah.
I mean, not shocking now that I know that this was happening.
Yeah. So the Catholic Church is still popular in Italy today, which is so wild to me. So I shudder to think what it was like in 48, how having key members.
Especially right after the war when everybody was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The country's in ruin. Like, all you have is your religion. Like, these people are leaders in the community, you know, seen as above, you know, you as a peasant or whatever. It's trash.
This country is such trash. I mean, look at it. We're like, oh, separation of church and state. But like over here, let's give the fucking, you know.
So the CIA's goal was to get these public officials, especially in the clergy, to publicly support the CD. And the crazy thing to me is that they would have supported the CD if they just let them be, because they were...
Because they had great policies.
Yeah, they had great policies, but they called themselves the Christian Democrats. Like, they were clearly, you know, fucking with religion. Like, it's like you didn't have to do all this, but like they really felt like they had to do all of this. The CIA does claim to this day, and it's very possible, they claim that the PCI, the Communist Party in Italy at that time, was being funded by the Soviet Union.
I'm sure that there is a lot of truth in that.
Yeah, no, they were. But in the same way that the US was funding the CD, absolutely not. And the numbers, granted, we don't have a lot of receipts from the Soviets, but there is some evidence that there was financial aid. But it's described in an article that I read that it was occasional and modest, and that it is very possible. I read another article that said that maybe the Kremlin was just better at hiding their bribery, their influence. Maybe they did spend as much money as the US did, and they were just, I don't know, more sneaky or whatever. That is possible. Maybe these people with loose lips went missing, you know. They went out for a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Anything is possible, but we do have significant US receipts. So it's very it feels weird that the US is like, they did it too. And it's like, but we mostly just have your receipts. So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels like a lie. Not a lie, but like, you know, they're trying to get some of the heat off of them, being like, they did it too.
Sure,
we did it in response to them. Everyone was doing it, type of thing. So all of this came to light. So no one knew about this for decades. All of this came to light in the 60s. I'm jumping ahead, aren't I? I am jumping ahead. I'm sorry.
You son of a bitch.
Why I oughta you gotta talk with your hands or people don't understand you here. It's actually kind of fun. I'm like, this is my workout. I'm gonna have such toned arms. So the Christian Democrats, I'm glad that you're seated for this, they ended up winning the 1948 election. They got almost half the vote. I think it was 48%. The FDP, like the coalition of leftists, they got about a third of the vote, which was still pretty significant.
Yeah. I mean, with all of that propaganda being funded by a different country.
Yes.
That's wild.
So most scholars do agree that the CIA's covert intervention helped swing the election. It's hard to know how much.
Duh.
Yeah, I know. Jesus. I know. But Tux, all of the apologists online about like, this is what they had to do to keep Europe whole. And it's like, wait, you had to interfere in a sovereign nation's election to keep Europe whole? Like, does that make any sense? As a country who proclaims to be for democracy, like, get the fuck out of here. But I read a lot of that and I'm just like, wow. I have to make this statement, but it's trash. So they swung it. They just don't know how much the influence. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to know how much exactly.
Sure, sure. Of course.
But yeah, they interfered enough that scholars say that it raises very serious questions about just the legitimacy of the election. After the fact,
you don't
I know
say.
I know
some experts think that the sun is where the light comes from that shines on the earth. Mean,
you don't know how many articles that I read was just like, oh, they God. Did the right thing, and I'm like, but they delegitimize a whole electorate, like, how is that the right thing? But yeah, mess.
Can you imagine if it had been the other way around and a foreign power was trying to interfere in our election? Well, actually, we wouldn't do anything. No. We'd be like, oh, Well, the party I liked won anyway, so it's fine.
How dare you? I think I know what you're talking about, but like, maybe this is theory.
I mean, who can say? Who can say?
Maybe this is just theory. A what if? So after his defeat, the leader of the PCI, the head of the Communist Party there, Palmiro Togliatti, he said that the elections were not free. Brutal. You guys can't hear Tux's eyes.
Yeah, they just popped out of my face.
He went on to say brutal foreign intervention was used, consisting of a threat to starve the country by withholding aid if it voted for the Democratic Front. The menace to use the atomic bomb against towns or regions that voted pro-communist. That's really fucked up if it's true. I mean, I
was just going to say, like, I was.
That's really.
Wow.
I mean.
I hope that that's hyperbole.
Me too. Me too. And I saw a lot of places quoting this, but yeah, I mean, yeah, same. I just hope it's not true. I didn't look too deeply. I'm like, maybe he should.
This might be another one of those, maybe, like, I caught a fish and it was this.
Yeah. Oh my God. I hope so.
Situations.
I hope so. But at the same time, like, this was Truman's CIA. Like, he I mean, I don't know. It seems very plausible, and it makes me really sad that they. Like, I would be so scared. Like, I would believe. I would vote.
Sure.
Yeah. The fact that they had just dropped the U.S. They. I like that I've separated myself from it.
They. Those assholes over there.
The U.S. had dropped two bombs. And, like, if people really thought that if I voted for this party, they would drop a bomb on Italy, like, that's really scary. That's really fucked up.
That's fucked up. Wow.
Yeah. So flash forward to recent times, the Italian government had no fucking idea that this had happened. They had no idea that the CIA was meddling like this deeply until the 1960s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some Italian journalists, academics, and also, you know, some loose-lipped former CIA agents, they spilled the beans about what really went down. And in the 70s, Italy, the Italian parliament got really curious about, like, we're hearing all these rumors, like, we need to really look into it, what happened. So they had a formal investigation into what the CIA did, and they uncovered a lot of information, a lot of receipts, a lot of things that I've already told you about. Like, this all came out in the 70s. And yeah, it was a huge deal, a huge deal. And yeah. So
that's wild,
right?
What did they do when they unearthed all these receipts?
So there was a lot of like, oh no, we didn't. Or these people went rogue, you know, deniability.
What people? Truman?
I know, right? Well, because it was done by the CIA, they weren't able to really, like, there are receipts.
Trace it back. Yeah.
But there was a lot of like, oh, we didn't know. Oh, this person did something. These whole groups of people did something. But it really did affect the U.S.-Italy relationship for a while. But the CIA would keep interfering in Italian politics every single election for the next 24 years.
And oh my God, did they find this out as well? Or
this kind of came out. This is like when they stopped, kind of. Yeah, this is like when they stopped.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or so no left-wing coalition would win a general election for almost 50 years until 1996. And there would
Christ.
Be there would be a multitude of reasons for this. You know, Italians, I mean, I read so many differing reasons for why, you know, the left never gained power. But the biggest was the CIA in the Cold War. But there was a lot of evidence for Italians being conservative. They're definitely conservative when it comes to religion. But there were people saying like, oh, it's because they're such a conservative country. They have this tie to the Catholic.
They weren't before.
They have ties to the Catholic Church, et cetera, et cetera. But the U.S. was very, very interested in keeping Italy on its side. So they worked really hard to maintain a NATO presence. And this is why they went so hard in influencing their elections for 24 years. They wanted to keep the Mediterranean. They wanted the status quo, basically, meaning pro-U.S.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Guess how many elections the U.S. would interfere in as of 2023? Like in total, guess.
I mean, I want to say all.
I mean, no, it's not like that big. I mean, any two is too big.
Yeah. But so, like, wait. But do you mean after that, like 20-year period?
So this is the first time. 1948 is the first time that the U.S. would directly interfere in a sovereign nation's election.
And how many elections are held? Like how often are elections held?
That is a good question. It depends, I think, for every country. Okay, just 81. 81 times.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
In Italy or just
no,
in Europe?
No, in the world. Okay. In the world.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That seems low.
I know, right?
For us.
Yeah, 81 times in the world. And we, the number two country that is interfering is the Soviet Union / Russia. And they're only at 36.
Okay.
Yeah. So guess which country had the most numerous episodes of election interference in the world?
From us.
Just generally. From anyone.
I'm going to guess... somewhere in Central America?
Italy.
Oh, okay.
Italy was a top target of election interference with 12 very documented confirmed cases since the 40s. Wow. Yeah, 8 times by the U.S., but other times by the USSR, and I think one time by Libya? So, yeah.
Libya, okay.
Yeah, I believe it's somewhere in the Middle East. Maybe Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
I was about to say they've got some money to throw around.
Saudi Arabia. So yeah, 8 times by the U.S. And historians have reasons for this. First was, you know, the U.S. was very afraid of the Red Menace during the Cold War.
The boogeyman.
they were afraid that the Communist Party in Italy would gain enough momentum to join the Soviets and like become part of the, you know, the communist bloc. But there's another reason. Unlike many of the other communist parties and other democracies, like in Europe and like all over the world, the Italian Communist Party did not experience any decline in its membership during the Cold War. It raged, like it actually grew.
Wow.
They remained a very strong political force, and they came very close to winning multiple Italian elections, even with interference from the US, Great Britain, and the motherfucking Vatican. This is how much Jesus. Italians were not buying capitalism, and I fucking stand the end.
It's, I mean, and now, but they're now kind of right wing in Italy.
I mean, it's right wing. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They're edging back right wing. But again, they still, it's still Europe. So they're still socialist fundamentally, but there's a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment. There's a lot of right wing groups like skinheads getting more. Mm. I mean, it's kind of what's happening in the US.
I feel like, we're in this weird, like, 100-year cycle where it's all happening again. Yeah. The 20s are
here with us. So yeah, this is the model. This is where the US cut their teeth in that, like, CIA Cold War spy shit with Italy, of all places.
This is wild. Right? What a story. Thank you for telling this. Holy fucking shit.
Yeah. 8 times the US is like, you don't need to vote for
that we know of. I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess it makes sense that there was like a patient zero that we tried it on.
Yeah, but you would have thought that it was like some tiny little, or Cuba. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, I guess after World War II, Europe was sort of like fucked.
Yeah.
And when you think about European countries, Americans didn't give a fuck about Italy.
No.
You know what I mean?
Not at all. Like,
we didn't give a fuck about Italians. No. Like, Italians were second class citizens up until very recently. Yeah. So I guess it all kind of makes sense when you think about it historically, but like, still, Jesus.
Yeah. That's a lot. I think I'm going to do a mini about, it might be big. I hope it's not big. I haven't looked into it, but it
has to be a full episode.
Yeah, it has to be a full episode. It might have to be, but at the same time, it's like, I'm glad that I told this story because it is patient zero and it predicts, like it creates the pattern that we know way too well. CIA fuckery. When I was researching it, I'm like, I've told this story before. And I'm like, no, this is the first story. Yeah. You need to tell this and then you can be done.
Yeah. I mean, like, from now on, you can just be like, you saw it happen in this country.
Yeah. It is nice to know where it started.
I think that is important.
I did not think it started in Italy. Yeah. Like, I would have never guessed that.
No, that's shocking. Yeah. It's wild to think that it started in Italy. And also, like, the time period that it started is sort of new information as well. Wow. Well, thank you for telling that story. My cocktail is about to be empty. Yeah.
Mine is so empty. I accidentally knocked it over and it was just,
I heard it was that just a moment ago.
Just dust in there.
Dust in the wind.
Dust in an orange peel. I like that they gave me garnish. They read your
instructions.
They followed it.
They really did. They did.
It's
that.
Time. It's time to go because everything is falling.
Stephanie's tired.
I am tired. It's late. The time just
it is late.
The time just shifted. I am now 6 hours away from Eastern time, as opposed to 5 hours.
Oh, because tonight is daylight savings too?
No, it was on Sunday.
Oh my goodness. Oh, Sunday okay. Sunday night at 2. Yeah. Yesterday.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my drink is empty. America's history is juicy. We just add Campari and vermouth. Hashtag history's favorite ingredients. Yes. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lerzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
And thank you to our new audio editor. We could not do this without you. Yes,
that is facts.
Facts on facts. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend
family member or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.